March 20, 2008, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
from Pedro Show, March 20th, 2008. I'm here in my pad in Pedro. I was without Brother Matt, because I want to hurry up and get this up, this show up, because, well, let me tell you, we started off with John Coltrane doing Velvet Scene, and then we had Wall of Gum by Black Moth Super Rainbow. Speaking of which, I saw them a couple nights ago up in Hollywood. Shit, in fact, me. And it was a great gig. And for me, first time seeing them. And before they played, I got to speak with their main man, Tobacco. Well, he also makes his own music called that. And we're going to hear that in a little bit. But I did a spiel with him, but it was like an hour long, so it'll be the whole second hour of the show. Okay, because I couldn't fit it on this first one here with music. So, but like I said, Tom makes music as Tobacco. And what he explained to me is like Black Moth Super Rainbow is kind of his band for playing gigs. And they did really good for them, though. You know, they got trippy names. I can't think of them right now, but the drummer was incredible. I mean, wow. But really, all of them, the two people playing the keyboards and the, you know, synthesizers and Fender Rhodes and just things I don't really have a lot of experience with operating, but just to hear it, and then a bass player. And sometimes he would work like a bass version of a keyboard, too. And Tom kind of runs the whole deal with playing his voice through a vocoder, which is like a synthesizer. I don't know a lot about that either. But all I can tell you is what I might not know how it's put together and all that so much, but experience in the way they delivered it, you know, which is sounds and rhythms. And they also had some things on a screen too, but the sounds and music, I mean, it was like, wow. And I've been really digging what he sent me, you know. But the live thing was really neat. But he's got a new album as Tobacco, and let me play you some songs here. I don't mean to be foaming up like this, but it was kind of a trip for me, you know. So here's some new Tobacco off the new, I think it's called, the album's going to be called Fucked Up Friends.
shaman local, like vomit a comic rug. Overflood a levee, hope it soaked the very roots. We animate the council of the topiary wolves. Move them out, roll high, to the ground like a two-headed hound with God's eyes. The botany's alive and rotten me. Aches, I flip the fertilizer bombs like water into the yawning of its filthy ivy farms. The jelly is canary in the mind's overdose. When a cane is blue, it's not hopeless, smells like guns and roses. Honestly, the bark and bite are equally shit.
From Pedro Show. Okay, that was Tobacco with we just heard, well, fucked up. We started off that chunk with Tape Eater and then Dirt featuring Aesop Rock, Cat, Black Moth, Super Rainbow got to tour with last fall. He's a rapper cat. And then Pink Goo. And then we heard from Position Normal, an England band, with Fan-fucking-tastic. Okay. I forgot to also tell you happy first day of spring, because today is the vernal equinox. It's been great weather here in Pedro since I've been back from a tour in Japan. I got to pedal and paddle every day. And, yeah. The righteous living here. For what? You know, wherever you live is probably great too, because everything's got something to teach you. But I like paddling and pedaling at the crack of dawn, so the weather has enabled that activity for me. So I'm grateful. There was another band the other night that opened up for Black Moth Super Rainbow. They were called The Locks. They were from Chicago. And here's a tune by them.
Thank you. Got one here, I'm going out to all those homies. Pigeons down in Highland Park. Take a look out after dark, what do you see, pigeons?
Gun store, liquor store, gun store, liquor store, gun store, liquor. Gun store, liquor store, gun store, liquor store, gun store, liquor.
Raining in the rafters, leers a puppeteer, shrouded in self-splendor, pontificating fear. Pulling strings won't move me.
Thank you. back in my pocket. No, I can't stumble.
I don't know if he is. Il est mort quand j'avais 3 ans.
Watt from Pedro Show. I just played you Half Brother by a band called Old Man. Which is fitting, coming from somebody like me. No, actually, it's this great label. I'm going to play some more music. I got turned on to by the... Oh, shit. Phone. Just a sec. Fuck it. What?
What? Aaron.
Hey, Aaron. I'm doing a radio show right now, man. You want me? Okay, I'll come check it behind the Warner. See the mural you painted.
Well, it's that, but I want to put something of yours in it. And you got to see the people who lives in Craig Cut, okay?
Oh, something about D Boone?
Oh, dude, it's right in the middle of the mural. It's
oh, wow.
Me, Craig, and Victor hit the whole wall. Get back to your radio show. Call me back.
Yeah, I will. I will. I'll come down there when I get done. Okay, out. Sorry about that. That was Aaron White. I guess him and Craig Ibarra and Vinny Vegas, no, Victor Gaston. They all came together and put some mural on the back of the Warner Theater downtown Pedro here, and they want me to come check it out, so, or to add some ideas. Sorry about that. Anyway, before Old Man, we heard something live by the Velvet Underground, a song I guess a lot of people didn't know of. It's from a bootleg, I think, in 67 or something, somewhere in the, I think it was the first time they played Sister Ray, maybe too, some gig in New York City, and a song called I'm Not a Young Man Anymore, which fits with the other one. We heard Gun Store Liquor Store before that by the Pretentious Pigeons. And I Don't Believe It by the Jimmy before that. I think they're from Chicago, too, like what we started off with, the Lox, with a song called Where in San Diego is Anna Medieta? Watt from Pedro Show. I'm going to play tonight with a fellow San Pedro person, although she hasn't lived here for a while, Carl Bozulich. I mean, I'm sharing the bill with her. I'm playing with my missing men, Tom and Raul, at Safari Sam's. My favorite place to play in Hollywood. Favorite place to play almost in SoCal. Maybe it is, I think. Because I love Sam, and the pad is good to play. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But here, more music. What theaters?
On the escalator, you just asked me, but I this before it's too late. I wanna be the one to hear you call, to catch you as you tumble while the empire falls. And when I say it out loud, I look like Samir. Has us in its tow, but there's one thing that can make it alright, holding on to you in the dying light. And when I say it out loud, I look like Samir, but I gotta do it anyway. Tell you how I feel, and the darkness that surrounds us, I'm gonna make my stand. Loving man.
A Lot From Peter Show. Started that bunch of music out with Haydn by Cohen and Knockouts. And then the Dirt Bombs, which that's Mick Collins' band with from Detroit with two bass, two drums, and the fuzz bass part is the Cohen the Knockouts person. Anyway, Ever Loving Man. So heard her twice. And then Yuki Kawana with the Black Swallowtail. And then we heard Milk Crashes by the Go Team. Let's see, we're coming on the end. Yeah, I have an hour here. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go to Japan again May 10 to 17 to record with Mr. Shinri Mizuko this thing called Spielgusher. Richard Meltzer gave me 53 poems. And we're putting the music behind that. Very interesting for me. I love Richard Meltzer. And they're so beautiful. They have the band Migu, which I got to record last summer with them a couple songs. So maybe we'll do more of that too. But I look forward to going back there. And maybe some other things. June from Light, Brother June on the bass, we're talking about. So we'll see what happens anyway. Before the Stooges touring starts, I get to do some recording there. Oh, and of course, on D. Boone's birthday, April 1st, I think 10 days or something, 11, 20, I begin a Black Gang album with Nels Klein and Bob Lee. My Shubun no Hi. It's pretty trippy. My First Day of Autumn album. So, yeah, we are at the end of the first hour of the March 20, 2008, first day of spring this year. Edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. This has been hour one. Hold tight for hour two. And we got that interview from a couple days ago with Tom Tabaka of Black Moth Super Rainbow coming up. March 20, 2008. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. And coming up here, I got pretty near an hour of spiel with Tom Tabaka, who has a band, Black Moth Super Rainbow, and also has a new record coming out as Tabaka soon. He's from Pittsburgh. I got to tell you beforehand, you know, sometimes I windbagged a little too much, I think, man. So don't think I was Bogarting on him. What happens sometimes, with this, especially with young people that are really fired up with their own vision, very creative, and yet not ego-tripping or full of themselves. I mean, these kind of people have always been very inspiring to me. It makes me feel the fire when I was young with D. Boone and, you know, just the joy of doing stuff, and it's infectious on me. And so I'm not trying to make any excuses, but I forget my place, you know. I ain't, even though I've been doing this radio thing a little while now, I have it together all the way, you know, and I get caught up in the moment and start foaming up, and it's kind of embarrassing. But, you know, he's so even-keeled and stuff. He was very patient with me, you know. And I really liked him a lot, you know. I do like him a lot. And I think he's 28 or something. But amazing how he got into music by peddling, you know. Because I kind of had to go back to peddling. Shit, I didn't pedal for 22 years. And it helped to recharge my music thing in a way. So that's trip how he got into music. From there's a lot of trippy things. It's a very interesting thing. It's a wise thing to say. So without further ado, here's Tom Tabaka, and rapping with him behind the Shittin' Factory up in Hollywood. And I got Tom here from Tabaka and Black Moth Super Rainbow. He's come to, it's March 18th, 2008, and I'm in Hollywood in the back of the Shittin' Factory, and Tom is going to play here. Tom, this your first gig in Hollywood?
You know what? Is the Henry Fonda Theater, is that in Hollywood?
It is.
And this is our second in Hollywood.
In fact, it's on Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay.
Down the street. We're on Hollywood Boulevard, but it's a little more east, okay, by the freeway.
This is our second.
That's an old pad. I think it goes back to like 30s and shit. Bad sound.
You know what though? I liked how they draw the curtain.
Oh yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
Between bands, because I hate pulling our shit down in front of everyone. Because when you don't have roadies and you're just a band like us and you have to unplug everything and everyone's
yeah.
watching you, it's like it's really anticlimactic.
The magic.
Yeah.
Well, you toured with Flame the Lips, and Wayne's up there setting up, right? Tearing down.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got Justin helping him.
Yeah, he gets involved. We actually stayed with Justin last week.
Cool people,
yeah.
Heck yeah, like... Oh, so yeah, you're on a tour.
Yeah, I guess it just revolves around South By. Like, we needed a reason to go to South By, and we needed a reason to tour the country again, so we just combined the two reasons. And now we're here. So we're just going to loop around, like, the perimeter of the country, and it ends in Chicago at the end of March, and that'll be it.
What was your thoughts about Southwest? You played a few gigs there, huh?
Yeah, I didn't want to do South By again this year, because I thought, with all the attention we got last year, it seemed like kind of pointless to do it this year, but I don't know. It ended up being a lot of fun, and I think it was... I think instead of having pressure to perform, it was more like people just kind of wanted to see it and have fun. So it was more of like a big party atmosphere than like a we have to impress these people. You know what I mean?
And that was
Yeah, last year I felt like we had to impress people, and this year it was like, you know, we'll just have fun.
Yeah, yeah. And what'd you do? Play the label night or something?
Yeah, we played we played a day party for a label that we're friends with, and then we played a Vice day party that I sprained my ankle at, and then we played our label's showcase later that night.
We're right over the parking lot. Let's go over on this side of the van here. These motherfuckers. And yeah. If you had to describe somebody what South, because people are always asking me about it, you know, I've only done two of them. And, I mean, the cliche would be to say a clusterfuck of a bunch of people who are already got something going, and they're counting on these young kids that drive from Alaska thinking they're going to get signed, and they ain't going to get signed, so they're like partying on their trip, so there's kind of a cynical thing of looking at it. But I actually, a couple times I've been there, you do see folks that's legitimate and good energy, and it's, my God, when else do you get to see them? So, that was kind of a statement, that wasn't a question.
I can respond to the statement.
Yeah, okay.
I think South by Southwest for me has been waiting in a bunch of lines, not getting into shows, and being disappointed by bands that I used to really like. It's weird.
So it's kind of a letdown.
Yeah, and then like it's really rough to play. Like I don't like having the van parked in the middle of, it's like Mardi Gras, and you come out of your show at the end of the night, and you have people like sprawled out on your van. They're drinking beers on the top of your van.
Yeah, I've seen that. I had a kind of lucky because it was in my band, so I was the side mouse both times, so maybe I didn't have a fair thing of it. And I conked at spots bad. For Spot from the old SST days lives in Austin now, so I didn't have to deal with that, but I could see the lines. I could see the issues if you didn't have the right kind of thing, credential. Yeah. So there was that kind of elitist thing. Yeah, I've only done two because, in a way, by not supporting those things, maybe it's kind of good. By supporting them, maybe you get some attention. That's why you were there last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it went over good. You think there's a backlash? Like how we already saw it?
I don't know, maybe. I think last year, though, it was more like critic kind of people that came to see it. And now that they saw it last year, like, now actual real people know about it. So, like, the real people actually came out this year. And I heard that, like, I heard that the... Have you ever seen that movie Superbad?
Oh, yeah. You know, the old one?
No, the new one.
No.
Oh, there's a fat kid in Superbad that came to our show. We've never had any, you know, we've never had anyone like the fat kid from Superbad.
Oh,
from
wow.
Our shows.
Wow.
It was weird.
But, or Superbad was a compilation. It had a bunch of hits from the early 70s. Superbad. Maybe it wasn't a movie. It was one of them KTEL put together things. I don't know, it stuck in my head some time ago. Well, you know, I found out about you. I'm really intrigued by your sound, man. It's wild. I really, really like it, man. Your band. I've been around a little bit, and it, to me, is like, wow. And I'm interested in how you got started. Like, what was your first musics?
People ask me that a lot, and I didn't really like music as a kid. I don't know why, I just didn't. And then like I was telling you earlier, like I was really into trying to learn how to ride like street and flatland BMX. And when I broke my wrist, it just kind of seemed like music was less dangerous. And I don't know, I guess I started off on guitar and I was just making like weird noise music. And then to get where we are now with the synths, that was probably like around like 2002 or 2003. I think it was actually the guy and the keyboardist in our band, he goes by Father Hummingbird, the tall guy.
Yeah.
He picked up one of those old synths on eBay, and I had no idea like you could still get that stuff, you know, because I think eBay was still kind of fresh at the time. I don't remember, but that was pretty much what started it. And we got really into these synths, and we just decided to make a band like that.
You got into synths. You didn't check out synth records.
We were talking earlier about that band Boards of Canada. Like I really liked that album, and that's like a synth album, and that was probably one of the things that really got us kickstarted. But it was actually like getting that first synth and just playing with it and seeing what it could do with it, because before then it was all like everything we had was like Casio or like digital, and it just sounded cheap to me, you know.
Game Boy.
Yeah.
There's bands where guys play Game Boy. Some dude was telling me about a band.
My bassist has a project called Power Pill Fist. It's all, you know, remember Atari 2600? The old Ataris? Yeah, he just uses Ataris.
Wow. That's a trip. But, you know, let the freak flag fly. I'm into it. So you didn't really listen to the old records?
No, I mean, I loved, like, when I was a kid, I really loved... I guess if there was any music that I really loved, it was, like, those little bumpers in between shows on PBS... You know, they would have, like, in between, like, Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, there would be, like, this weird, like, you know, like, synth thing. And I kind of wanted to recreate that. And then it just kind of snowballed into, like, what if I could recreate that and write like a pop song at the same time that didn't have to adhere to like the old PBS bumper rules.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe more people could understand it.
Now, for synth music, you write kind of short songs. Because a lot of those cats like to go on.
Yeah, I can't stand... I don't have the attention span for, like... I don't like progressive music. I don't like jam bands. It's just, like... it's too long. I like... I just like a short chunk of... You know, something that you can hum in your head.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you mean by pop song.
Yeah, that's what... I don't mean... Yeah, I definitely don't mean, like, stuff that's on the radio. I just mean, like, stuff that's really, really memorable. And short and easy to digest.
Husker was like that. You know, buzzsaw guitars, but you could remember the melody
right.
And shit. Grant, Bob.
And I think that's what's great about a band like Lightning Bolt is, like, it's noise.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people do noise, and it's just noise, right? But those guys actually wrote... They write songs.
Yeah, yeah. Know? Yeah, yeah. And at some point, everything is kind of noise, and then people say, no, it's music.
Right.
But... there is a crafting on it, and it has something to do with melody. But you're good with syncopate, you know, and the interplay between the instruments. I was curious on how's it do. You bring it to the cats. Well, basically, you were telling me this band is the live unit to bring
right.
your recording thing
right.
to gigs. So they're following your parts.
Well, most of the time, but it. I kind of like it can't be like five me's in a band, you know what I mean? So like I like to I'll finish a song and then bring it to them, and then they can either interpret it the way they want to interpret it, or they can write something that works for what they do. So it's not all. So I think that's what makes the live show a lot different from the recordings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost like two different bands, but kind of not.
Yeah. It gets realized live. Studio more, that's the solamente, or the one.
Right.
Yeah. Your first album, were you on all of it?
Yeah.
Because I just heard it, you know, you sent it to me, thank you. And wow. That's true. This might be weird, but have you ever used L? Have you ever ate L?
No, you know what? Everybody.
Everybody, it's a generic question.
No.
Sorry.
When we were about to go on tour with the Flaming Lips,
yeah,
everybody was coming up to me and like, they're like, oh man, like it's going to be so fucking crazy. You and Wayne backstage doing LSD. And I was like, you know what? I don't think that's going to happen. And then when we finally went on tour with them, it's like, so, it's the, like, it's not like you know what I mean, like I
don't, oh yeah, I've toured with them.
Yeah, at least I don't know what they were like then, but now he's just like a normal guy, and he'll sit back there and just give you advice, and it's almost like a business meeting, you know what I mean? It's not like, it's not, we're not sitting back there doing LSD or anything.
Because you do, are you conscious of the psychedelic?
You know what? I'm not even. It's just kind of what sounds good to me.
Yeah. So it's a sensibility. Because in the old days, this is where I never could understand Grateful Dead, because there's no trippy parts, you know. In fact, I came to understand, and I thought, well, it's this calm kind of thing, so you don't lose your mind. Because for us, we wanted to lose our mind, so you wanted heavy-ass stereo and trippy shit. You know, and what's this stuff? Just noodling around on a guitar, you know. And we thought, oh, it's for, you know, we call them snapping turtles, you know. Don't want a rough thing there, so. But we want, you know. Now I haven't used it since I think 83 was the last time, so it's been a little while. And but I did think, but you know, I've met music people like this that make trippy stuff and don't trip.
I kind of feel like I wouldn't be able to like think enough about what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like
yeah. I did one gig on L, and I didn't play any licks. I couldn't make, but D Boone and Georgie had started. I'd start with them and I'd stop with them. And I just made them, and I felt like the sound was coming out of my bass amp like toothpaste. And I had a big tube in my arm, and I was just chopping different lengths of toothpaste coming out of it. It was terrible. It was embarrassing.
It sounds like it was fun though.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I was ashamed at the end. I didn't know we had a gig, see? That's why it happened. It was like T-Boone called, hey, oh, God, oh, man. Because it lasts like 10 hours. It don't last a long time. So that was... But I think I've talked to other people and they're like, oh, yeah, when I'm on it, I think I'm making the greatest stuff. And I listen to it straight and it's like, ah, it's terrible. So I never wrote on it. One time I wrote a journal. I was trying to be all clinical about it and like, you know, it's coming on and this and this. And I gave it to Petty Bone and he made a fucking comic out of it.
You know what? I was in New York a couple weeks ago and I met up with this guy. And somehow your name came up, and I told him, I was like, you know, oh, I'm talking to him now. And he was like, man, he's like, I have the coolest thing from him. It's like this zine that he wrote. And it was your experience. Yeah. And the last line was like, things will never be the same again, or something like that.
I didn't know Raymond was going to make it into him, but I love him. I mean, he's my best friend, and that was a shaming thing there. And I was trying to be all together and be clinical about it. And of course, you're losing your mind and you can't write and thinking about thinking and, you know, this kind of thing. And but I couldn't really mix it with music, but did use it with music, especially in the early punk days. We'd get these records. We didn't know any of these bands. We'd buy them just because of the name of the group or the album cover. And then we'd wait for the weekend. We had day off and then trip and listen to it for the first time. Yeah, because you wouldn't know anything, you know, what was going to come up. It's some of these bands, I mean, this is the 70s punk where, I don't know if you know bands like Cabaret Voltaire.
I know the name, but...
They were trippy. There was a period, you know, when it wasn't just fast guitars. It was like fucking anything to be in the scene. It was really fertile. And so I used L on that kind of stuff, really just to get our minds blown a little... I'm kind of glad I went through it because it is kind of a truth serum. So you would think about things a long time. Maybe I had to think about those things. But I don't know about it really fixing everything. I'm 13 in 1970, so I'm not really a 60s person. But there was a belief where L was going to solve everything. Somebody was telling me there's like this revival. And I know with the jam band... tie-dye and those people, but psychedelic and this word psych band.
Yeah, I think I guess that's what we are. Not on purpose, but I don't know. I'm not much of like a psych fan, I guess, but I guess it makes you think more, you know, like, I don't know, I guess I don't know if psych is defined by like having like echoes and like parts that are weird on instruments that are weird. I mean, I don't know, like, what, because I think we're a lot different from a band like Dead Meadow or like the Grateful Dead. Would you call the Grateful Dead a psych band?
Well, that was like more of the... I would call them responsible for the jam band thing in a way.
Okay. Yeah, I can't... I don't.
But they call them a psych... Is a psych band like a psychedelic band?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
That was just an older word.
Yeah.
And now we abbreviate.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know what... I thought it meant kind of like psychotic. Or like psych you out. You know, like trip you out.
That would...
Not so much psychedelic color.
I kind of like that definition for us.
Okay, so it is kind of revival, I guess. But you don't wear bell bottoms and... No.
No, I think a lot of people think that we're... A lot of people think we're hippies, and just because of the music. But I think a lot of people are kind of surprised when they meet us to find out that we're just like... We're pretty regular.
Yeah. And you're interested in music. That's the way... You get plugged too much into a social thing. It's more about the clothes, I think, than the music,
right,
man. And your music is like, it's music, man. That's what I think. It's really about a lot of ideas. And I think it's kind of like about breaking ground. I don't think it's so much revival. There's a lot of stuff you're doing that I don't hear from the old days.
Well, the way I like to think about it is I think revival is like a good idea to a point, but if you're just trying to mimic what everyone did in the 60s and 70s, like, you got it all wrong. Like, you have to be nostalgic for the things that were good, because there was a lot of garbage back then too. You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
But not only garbage, everything wasn't perfect.
No.
And there's no reason to try to copy exactly what you heard. So if you take your favorite ideas from back then and try to turn them into something new, then I don't know. Then maybe it won't sound so stale, you know?
Yeah, it ends up being kind of vocabulary anyway. I mean, when you write a novel, I've said this before, but you don't really invent, well, maybe Finnegan's Wake, but usually you don't invent a lot of new words, using words that a lot of other cats use. But you can write a very original novel. And sounds of those old days, although we got machines now, you're using machines. I think only a few cats were using then and didn't really know how to push them yet. I think they were trying to mimic things,
right,
like symphonies,
right,
and
right.
Horns.
Like, that's the thing. Like the keyboards that we're using, they were used, like the one polysynth that we use. People tried to, like, you know, because now you have like a Casio, you can click a button and it says organ. You click a button and it says string section. Back then, when they didn't have that, they would actually they would dial it in with all the knobs until they would find the strings. But we're just trying to find, you know, like the essence of what's inside of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like a spirit in them. And that's, you were talking earlier about the analog versus the digital and why you have to go back to the older machines, because the newer stuff has the Game Boy sound.
And even when it's like high end, like you pay $10,000 for a digital keyboard,
yeah,
that has like this amazing piano on it or whatever,
yeah,
like there's still, no matter what you do, there's still like a wall. Like, even if you can't tell, like if you can't pick it out, your brain somehow still knows, because all you're hearing is ones and zeros. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not hearing like the electricity being pushed through circuit. So it's a really big difference, I think.
Coils, capacitors, resistors, transistors.
To call us like an electronic band, I don't even think is necessarily right, because I think these things are just as real as a guitar. Because we're not playing samples or anything. It's just you strum the strings of a guitar,
yeah,
right? And that's like vibrations. And
right,
that's all it is. And you're hearing vibrations. That's all you're just hearing, the electricity, like the actual, you know, what that electricity looks like and sounds like.
Magnetic field collapses when the string interrupts.
Yeah.
Sends a current through the wire. I got a degree in electronics. I majored in punk rock, but I never used my degree. But it's interesting because, yeah, Segovia acoustic, but even he, for people to hear more than 20 or 30, he has to have a microphone. And so electrical things get involved. I guess the big diff is when it starts out, like with a digital keyboard.
Right.
Then there is no fundamental resonant, no vibration. Is it hard to teach your guys songs?
No.
Or you just play them for them?
Yeah, we've been doing this for, I guess, like 5 years now. So they're always excited and game to play anything new like that.
Ain't it righteous to have enthusiastic cats? No, I mean, I know that sounds naive, but so many people, if they get into this thing, they start taking it for granted, man, and it's hard to get them excited. You know, I was on tour last month with some guy who was whining about every little thing, and I was telling him about, there's nothing like a spirit of you and your cats playing. And maybe it goes way back to being boys. And I love it, man. And I never want to get whatever, musician enough to like outgrow that shit and just sleepwalking through connected dots. So you have this new one, right? It's Dandelion Gum. How was it different than the other guy?
Well, I think what did I give you? Started People and Dandelion Gum?
It said re-release too on it.
Yeah. Started People came out in 2004. That was our second album. That was more like really trying to capture like that PBS feeling from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And like apply that to songs, where Dandelion Gum was more just I wanted to hear like the crackles and the like the breathing of these keyboards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I had like we used like a
nuance.
Yeah, like everything went through an old Echoplex that I have. You know
Echo machine.
And it's pretty much dead. So it just kind of like it spins the tape around and it just kind of like breathes sound onto the tape. So you can, I don't know. I think we toured with Aesop Rock in November, and the way that he put it was that it sounds like you're like crawling. You're crawling in a trench. You're covered in bugs. You know.
Yeah. I don't. You know, I'm lost how you get any of those sounds. But it, what I love about it makes a world. Man, it makes a world. I mean, I don't hear studio. I don't hear mics. I don't hear even parts and stuff. I hear a fucking organic world, man. It's a trip. It's really cohesive, but then at the same time, it's free enough. Like, it could go anywhere. So there's this thing just teetering. And then also the dynamic of the songwriting. You can build, these tensions, these dramas, and then release it and gather back up. It's really intense. It's sort of like guys playing really well together and feeding off each other, not really knowing where it's going.
Right.
So to me, it's like alive. I love it, man.
Thank you.
I love it. And okay, they're machines that made them. So what? They're all machines unless you're singing.
Right.
And then you're singing into the microphone and that machine. So, oh yeah, vocoder.
I'll make sure I'll give you that first album tonight. But the first album, my real voice is on there, and that was when we first started playing live. And there were a couple of vocoder songs on there too, but like I realized that I was really, really uncomfortable with my real voice, and I didn't want to play. Like we did like maybe two shows where I tried to actually sing into a mic, and I felt so embarrassed and weird by that I went to the vocoder, because I knew like, you know, with the vocoder you can never go out of tune. You know, you can never be pitchy, or you're always on the right note. You could have a sore throat, whatever. You're always gonna sound fine.
Yeah.
And I think people sometimes think it's like a novelty. You know what I mean? Like they're trying to sound like a robot band or like whatever. But it's really not even about that. It's just. I always thought of vocal parts as just another melody, like it's part of that stew.
Yeah. Right.
And
that's
so,
how I hear it too.
And so.
It's not like a band backing up this.
Right, and it shouldn't be. And it shouldn't be. So, like, the vocoder is just another part. And if I can get a really, really colorful sound out of that that's better than my voice, why, you know, that I don't see that as a novelty. It's like...
How did you find it? Did you think first I gotta find a vocoder, or did you stumble onto one?
I actually don't remember. I think I thought that they were just like those old synths. I think I thought that they were harder to come by than they actually were. And then when I saw that Korg put out this thing called a micro Korg, I guess it was back in like 2002, whenever I was making Falling Through a Field, and I got one of those for like $400, and I think it sounds really bad, but then from there I was able to like dig in a little deeper and come up with what I'm using now.
So it was like, I want to go find one.
Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah, I don't even know where they're at, but they are a neat thing for tour too, especially, you know, gig 40 in a row and your throat is like, that's the hardest part. Well, fingers can even hang, but the throat, man, it's hard. Man, Adam's apple gets sizing.
Even with the vocoder, like the first couple times we toured, like me not being used to playing every day, it was like I actually was losing my voice singing through the vocoder. But now I've kind of like figured out how to control it now. But yeah.
So you learn it. How many tours now?
We've only done. It depends on what you count as a tour.
Okay.
If you want to talk like ones that were actually gone for a long time, this is only our third. But before then, we've done a ton of like 4-day, 5-day tours.
And you're out of Pittsburgh, so it's like you'd spring out from there.
Yeah.
Either east to New York.
Yeah, all over.
Or west to Ohio and Michigan. I always thought about there because the drives are a little shorter. Drives out here. But then there's the weather. So that shortens up the tour.
Well, that used to limit us to summer.
Yeah, right. Shows. Right. Where'd you meet you guys? Neighbors, friends, grown up?
Yeah, my bassist is actually my cousin.
Whoa.
And synth player I've known since middle school. And then I had a boss a couple jobs ago who she knew the other keyboardist and the drummer back from when she was in high school.
Ah, so no ads in recycling.
No. I could never ever do that. I've heard way too many words. And you can't
flakes. I got one.
You can't really be in it. Like, I mean, I'm sure you can get lucky, but it seems really, especially like how I'm trying to create like this world, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of hard to like create a perfect little world and not really know everyone that's involved in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Must have own equipment.
Yeah.
And like that, or no flakes. Like I'm kind of flaky. Yeah, you're out. You can imagine. I know cats, you know, they moved from Lambertville, Bob Lee, you know, and I'm just going to find a man. Balls of church bells.
Man. Yeah, insane.
Ah, shit. I would never have the nerve. The names that the band dudes have. Interesting.
I think after we started playing shows, we kind of realized that we couldn't just not tell people our names, and everybody at the same time. Like we were all kind of doing our own music on our own, so it kind of only made sense to like come up with these pseudonyms or whatever that people can get to know us by, and then someday when this band is over, because it can't last forever, and we're doing our own things, then you know you'll still remember. See something by like Powerpuff Fist or Tobacco or whatever, and you'd be like, oh yeah, that was back
then. Yeah. Well, in the bold punk days, everyone had made up names. They thought me and D Boone was the names for me. This can't be your real name. So we were lucky. But I like that idea because it's kind of you reinvent yourself. You invent yourself, man. It's part of the world creation thing.
Right.
The name of the band.
Name of the band was like an accident. I remember I wanted something that was gonna like that was gonna sound like a cereal. You know, like you know when you like you go to the store and it's like Frosted Flakes, yeah. like Honey Smacks, and it's just like sticks, like you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was just like walking around and I just thought of it. And it didn't really have any meaning at the time, but it kind of felt like what I wanted it to sound like, what I want the music to sound like, you know?
A black moth on a super
like,
rainbow.
I know it's like, it sounds kind of arrogant to say that, like, I wanted to do something that was, like, all new, that I couldn't really, you couldn't compare to that much, but the I wanted the name to be like that. Like, I wanted the name to be meaningless, but to mean something after, yeah, you know, after you hear this stuff.
Right, right, right. So it don't have a reference past,
yeah,
that you'd be free to define it yourself,
right,
with your music. And now, if you hear Black Moth Super Rainbow, and you hear the sound, bingo.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, for me, for sure. What, you tour with some bands, and what do you think of that? Is that a trip?
Yeah, it's I'm not like a touring kind of guy. Like, I like, most of the fun for me is writing the stuff in the first place.
Yeah.
And to me, like, the tour has always been kind of like the work that you do to get that message out there, you
yeah
know. But the last two tours, I consider it kind of one tour that just took 3 months. But when we went out with the Flaming Lips and then Aesop Rock, I kind of changed my opinion. Like, those lip shows, like, when we were playing for like 5,000 people a night, it was like, I'm used to playing for 100 people a night before then.
Yeah.
And just the way that the crowds got into that stuff, especially with the Lips, because they're like, they put on this giant, it's like a giant party with balloons and confetti, and like, everyone's so excited for it, and you know, they don't care who you are opening, they don't care that you're nobody opening, you know, it's just like, they just want to have fun. And
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That kind of changed my mind about it, and it was actually kind of fun to be on stage for the first time.
And then the other tour, maybe a little challenges?
Yeah, there was some...
a character builder moments?
Yeah, yeah. That we had never been heckled before, but Aesop, like, I had fucking blast being on tour with those guys and yeah becoming friends with those guys.
Yeah.
And we all had so much fun backstage, but the fact that it was a hip-hop tour, and in some towns there were some people who just wanted hip-hop, and so for the first time ever, like, I'm not used to getting heckled, because we usually play for, like, you know, like nice, like, indie rock kids, you know, and like, yeah, I think the first time people started chanting, like, get off the stage, and it was weird, it was really weird, and then that lasted for, not the whole tour, but a good, but, you know.
Yeah, I've had a lot of that, I've had incredible, intense things that you think are scripted, it's so outrageous.
Yeah.
It's so funny, in a way, but it's all part of a life, man. It's good, maybe you got a little bit.
No, it's good, because it wasn't anything, it wasn't severe. It wasn't severe enough to make me cry, but it was just severe enough to, like, you know, make me kind of used to it, you know?
It made me a little more determined.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes it's hard to, like, when you're trying to, like, keep the rhythm of a song, and someone's chanting out a rhythm on purpose
right,
to screw
right
you up, it's like maybe like 999 people are like loving what you're doing, but that one person in the front row, like, kills the whole thing.
Yeah. They probably know that.
Yeah.
It's their gig.
Yeah.
It's weird about playing for people. The whole thing. It's a strange trip. In a way, it's kind of all right. I mean, if everything is built in, maybe it turns a you know, built in perfect, maybe it's a Nuremberg rally. Maybe it's all right to have different things. And who knows? I know this. Sometimes there's delayed reaction. Those cats that might have been bumming, it might have been peer pressure on them. And then later, when they get enough courage to be on their own, they're thinking, man, I saw that band and I like them. And now I'm not afraid to admit. You never know. Sometimes the payoff is down the road.
Yeah, we did a just a few days ago, we did a show for that label that we're friends with. It was like a day party. I didn't realize this at the time, but it was an all metal show, except for us. We were right in the middle. And everyone, you know, everyone was awesome. But like afterwards, like bringing stuff out to the van, and you could hear people walk by, and he's like, "Oh man." This one guy was like, "Oh man, I'm sorry, like, sorry to put you through all that keyboard shit." His friend was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You know, I thought they were okay. They were pretty gay, but they were okay."
There's a lot of pressures on people, you know, young people especially, like, am I liking the right band?
Right.
I gotta say, it's better now, though. It used to be way worse. It used to be way fucking worse. I think younger people are a lot more open-minded. You know, the whole genre thing is bullshit anyway, man. Music is music.
It is, and I think, like, being, you know, like that Aesop Rock tour,
yeah.
Like people, the people who were booing us and calling for Aesop Rock to come out, I'm sure they had no idea that, like, you know, I'm making a record that Aesop Rock is, like, rapping on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, are you going to boo that?
Yeah, see? They're confused, you know? There's a lot of things. Music, especially, you know, in a big thing, social thing like that, it's not just music. There's other connects. If I like them, does she like them? Am I liking the right? Will they hate me if I like them? You know, so there's a lot of fucking weird shit. And one day that'll all be gone, maybe. And people in music will just stay and won't have to deal with that shit. And even if you don't like something, I know myself, I changed my mind.
Right.
You know, I was just all weirded out. There's a weird thing, too, about you see a band and automatically my mind wants to start comparing them to another band. I won't let the band live in its own world. Fucked up.
And that's, I think we've kind of been stuck there with, like, people. Because for a lot of people, their only point of reference on us is the Boards of Canada, because they use analog synths. I think they come from a way different place. They come from, like, a more, I don't know, it's just a different atmosphere, you know? Like, I'm trying to write, like, these pop songs where they're trying to write something else that I can't really define. But I think, like, maybe the only way to, like, to get over that, like, that comparison is just to kind of get used to a band's body of work, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, once you hear an album, it's like, okay, that sounds like Boards of Canada. And then maybe the second album goes a little bit different, and you're like, okay, well, that's, now they're kind of their own thing. And then maybe by the third album, you're like, oh, that's their, now I get all three of those albums. I understand exactly.
What, they've been around?
Yeah, they, I think Music Has the Right came out in, like, 98.
So you were hearing them before you started this
band?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. I'm the Neanderthal.
You should, I think
I'll
you probably
check
like
out.
Them.
I'll check them out. But you know, yeah, everybody comes from somewhere and they're listening to stuff before they take it on. God, John Entwistle, Jack Bruce. I mean, my early bass, I owe those cats a lot, you know. I couldn't hear bass. So, but then owing it to them, I couldn't just copy them. I had it, right? To have respect for them, I had to, like, well, let's do something with it. You know, that's their thing. But they do, the first things you hear that you really like do have a big impression on
it. Right.
God. It's not like you want to rip them off, but man, it's so, it gets you off, so you want to do those sounds.
If you can, that's like the perfect starting point, though, because if you can do that, and maybe you do sound like them in the beginning, but then if you can just start applying yourself,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Applying yourself, that's the trick to music. You know? Because there's a lot of these little techniques and stuff, but that's not the end all. Those are just little springboards. It's the way to get your inner voice out. That's the vocoder kind of makes me think of, is the inner voice, in a way, because it sounds inner. It don't sound robot the way you use it.
Yeah, I'm trying to get more and more, like, human with it. Just, like, colorful human, you know? Like,
it swells, it sways, it's trippy. And it has this quality of it being strange music, musical. It don't sound like it. Maybe the thing was invented to be Imitation Robot, but that's just where that cat took it. or started with it, and then you guys take it further. You know, like a lot of instruments. The guitar used to be in the rhythm section. And then look what Jimmy did to it, you know. Just so a lot of stuff. I know there's this thing about keeping it real, you know, right? Back in the day. And but what does that mean? You know, yeah. Because then everything's in glass boxes in a museum and fetish.
Well, that's something something I've always hated about music is when people are like, you have to, you know, you have to respect this band or these guys because look at what they did. But it's like, I don't like it, and I don't care that they did that because we're doing this thing, and I'm not doing this because they did that. So who, you know?
Right. What's it mean?
Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, it's a weird kind of pissing war. And it's getting away from the challenge of being creative with music. That's the thing. And I don't think you're afraid of that, man. I think you're fucking balls out about that. So, who cares about hierarchy, aristocracies, lineage, and all that? You know? In the early punk days, everybody had to, like, pretend they didn't know any of the old stuff. Rita Rock and all that. I was just born. You know, well, a lot of those cats were just playing. Yeah, you came off the guitar and then went to the synth. So you were almost playing right at the beginning if you're learning, right? You were like woodshed.
Well, I guess I never actually learned how to do anything. I just kind of played around until I figured stuff out. And then, yeah, like I... You couldn't sit me in front of like a piece of music and have me play it on a keyboard because I don't understand music.
Or copying records, yeah.
Yeah.
No, see, in the old days, that's what everybody did. You copied records.
I think that's why we don't do any covers because I don't know how. You know, like I can only figure out what I can come up with
in your head and do.
Yeah.
No, that I don't think that's a bad thing. There's plenty of like dudes doing the covers. I think that those ranks are filled. It's the other field that we need to pioneer rock. So it's that kind of nerve. So now I got an understanding of psychs. So psych is really this word for psychedelic. And it really ain't a new scene. But man, I knew that music in those days, and you guys don't seem like.
I think psych now is like. I think psych could mean like the revival bands. It could mean us. It could mean. It could mean even like noise bands who are just making free noise, but somehow are making it psychedelic and on some level. You know, I think psych can just be anything now that's just has something. Some kind of psychedelic quality to it, that whether you can come out and define it or not, you know.
You were doing guitar noise before the keyboard? So what, like Thurston? Sonics?
No, you know, I never actually was into... I never was really exposed to sonic use. So I was doing like... In high school, I loved Blues Explosion. You know
Spencer,
this guy?
Yeah.
But I wasn't that good. So I kind of, what I loved about them was like the way that they took blues, just traditional blues, and just kind of like noised it up, you know. And his vocals were screaming, and and so I wanted to like play around with that idea of like not being able to play at all.
I'm gonna interrupt. This is your response to get backstage.
Oh, thank God. Okay, oh wow, that's a trip. So kind of like a punk trip on it.
I guess.
Yeah, you don't have ability, but you still want to go for it.
Yeah.
You like the aesthetic of it. Not such an academic.
Yeah, no, I never...
You didn't go to school for music.
I never thought music should be academic, because once... Like, how can you put rules on something that people started... just to like express feeling? How can you turn that into like, how can you teach that?
Right,
like you could teach people you can go to school and you can learn piano and you can learn notes, but that's all you can, like, you can't learn how to actually feel that. You can just learn the timing of how your fingers have to hit the keys. That's all.
And hope for some cat to put music in front of you that you can execute.
Yeah.
Become a sampler. Anyway. Yeah, when you see a classical thing, it's like that. This guy is using these incredible technicians.
Or like, I even think, not to bash like a whole genre of music, but this math rock.
Yeah.
It was really big in Pittsburgh, like, when I was in high school, in like the mid-90s and like late-90s, but like...
Don Caballero.
Yeah, they're from Pittsburgh. Yeah. But it's exactly what they're saying it is. It's like, how can they... It's like, let's figure out these numbers of how we can like build these chords and then build the timing changes, and let's write songs around that. Like, that to me, that's not what it's about. You know what I mean? Like, I can't...
Birds don't do that.
Yeah.
Birds don't do that. Math rock, yeah, it's almost the perfect name.
Yeah.
It's coming around again. I just played with some bands. And they're young. They don't know fusion.
But can you get into it? I don't want to put you on the spot.
I've graduated in 76 and the big band was Return to Forever. Man, people loved that. And it was this sheer technocracy that people were like going, wow, they can do that. But I don't know if it was ever serving the tune.
Exactly.
I don't know if the tune was
involved. Your mind is like smart enough to come up with all these equations to be able to play a guitar, but who cares? You know?
I know, because but things change, you know, it's like sports or something.
Yeah.
And so you got score, people keep score, and music has had to really fight to survive all these things that humans do on it. Because I think music really is a language of the universe. It's probably here before, and we'll be here after. And we're just trying to wrap our hands and our minds around it. And I don't think people kind of... There's another opinion that goes, no, no, no. It comes from our minds. And I think dreams and ideas do, but man, they coincide with nature in the way sound reacts with things. Notes. Melody, rhythms. I don't know if it's all from the idea. I mean, it's very high opinion of yourself to think so. But in some ways, maybe we've just got big tubes of you know? And then, you know, and if you get it most, you know, there's this thing like Sufis, you know about these dervishes, and they whip themselves up and spin around and get all dizzy, so they get unlogical. And they can get ecstatic. They can get in a state that's free of the convention of the normal thoughts. And, sometimes I kind of have to do that because I'm so self-conscious playing, man. If I had to just stand there like a recital, oh my God. So I whip myself up into a thing where I don't really know what's going on. I mean, I want to play tight with my guys. But that's what the prac's for, almost, just to have almost a second nature, so I don't have to guess. But really, I want to get in a state that's out of the classroom.
Right.
You know?
Well, even like, I don't even mean to go back to this, but like how you were saying, like you're asking me, like, about psych.
Yeah.
Like, if you even think about it, like, to put a name on anything like psych music,
yeah.
you're like, I know, like, you have to use those genre names to explain stuff, but, like, in the end, like, that's the same as, like, music school.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, for a tag to be on music, there have to be rules, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anytime there are rules, then it's just not what it should be anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But there is a weird thing about school, because I do think I learn shit with music, but... It's almost to learn to get free of the rules.
Right.
Learning, I mean, there's rules to not learning the rule. I mean, there's some self-inclusive paradox going on. So it's hard to talk about. But I do feel I am in a weird kind of classroom. But coming especially from my punk traditions, I really have disdain a lot of that convention shit. And the genre, I think, also with marketing, has some use to make their job kind of easier.
Right.
And maybe the music cad's job is to make their job really hard. And listeners, like even myself, when I hear a band and I start, my mind automatically starts referencing. I hate that.
What's so, like, if you're like a kid and you're gonna start a band and like you're thinking like, oh, I'm gonna start a punk band.
Yeah.
Then like you kind of already fucked yourself, because it's like you should just start a band, and then if it sounds like punk music, then cool. But if you go into it thinking like, I'm gonna start a punk band, so this is how I'm gonna have to write, you know, like I'm gonna have to like have this kind of distortion or whatever, like, you know what I mean?
That's terrible. See, because the punk I came from, there wasn't really, it wasn't a music style, especially with hardcore. It kind of, it was confusing, you know. I liked the spirit, but I couldn't go off on music. They wouldn't experiment with music. And they were yelling anarchy, and I really believed in that. And I was like, where is it?
Anarchy within these rules of these four chords.
Very heterodox, homogenous, orthodox. Yeah, it was like, kind of scary. It was like, oh my God, what has happened? The gigs are predictable. You know what the band's going to sound like.
Well, like, why couldn't punk be like you with like a saw, like cutting a log and somebody like smashing on a wind chime? You know what I mean?
For me, that is punk. For me, punk was just getting out of your own prison. Tom, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you.
Much respect. You got any last words? Yeah, what would you tell somebody starting a band right now?
I don't know, just don't try to copy someone, and don't try to not copy someone. Just I don't know, just kind of let your voice grow, you know, on its own, without trying to limit it, or because if you try to not sound like anybody else, that's just as bad as trying to sound like, because you're still trying too hard, you know?
You're being manipulated.
Yeah. By yourself.
By yourself. You're playing yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are good thoughts. I will think about that. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Brother.
March 20, 2008. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. We just, in the second hour there, heard a interview done a couple days ago on the 18th up in Hollywood, California. I know there's a Hollywood in Florida, maybe some other states too. This was a Cali one. An interview with Tom Tobacco. You know, musician behind Black Moth, Super Rainbow, and his own tobacco stuff. And man, did I say some stupid shit there? I apologize, you know. But his thoughts are pretty much on the money, you know. And much respect. What I got now is part 5 of Jack Flanders, In Dreams of India.
So, do you think it's haunted?
No, it's not that. It's something else. I don't know, but Kama?
Yes?
You're looking at me so strangely.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking about what you were saying.
Well, what do you think? Now, you've been up there.
You know my aunt has forbidden me to go.
You mean you've never been inside?
Once.
Well, did you see the room that's furnished?
Yes.
Well, did it feel strange to you?
I was very young.
Something happened, didn't it?
I don't know. When they found me, I was unconscious.
Really?
That's when my aunt made me promise never to enter the palace again, or she would have it burnt to the ground.
I see.
But I don't think she could do that. Somehow the palace is connected to what happened to her.
Well, what has happened to her?
Jack, I hope she'll tell you.
Yeah.
Jack, all I know is what I told you. When she was young, she made a pact in order to escape and see the world, and now it's come to collect.
Kamala, who is it?
I'm not sure.
Well, what do you think it is?
Well, it's certainly not of this realm.
Well, come on, tell me a little bit more, please.
Auntie?
I'm sorry I couldn't join you for dinner.
Are you feeling better?
Oh, yes, thank you. I love to sit here and look at the river. It's so peaceful. Makes me wonder why I ever left this place.
You lived here as a child?
My father was a minister for the Maharaja. This was our house. It was owned by the Maharaja, but it was ours.
So the summer palace up there...
Jack, you asking Mr. Flanders?
I was up there.
So?
It's very beautiful. It's like a painted box from Kashmir. The rooms are all empty, except one room is furnished. Drapes, carpets, pillows, sofas.
Ramchandar, meri chai leo.
Ji ha, ma'am sahab.
You were saying?
One room is still intact. In fact, it looks like it's been that way for years.
Would you like to know why?
Well, it is a little out of the ordinary.
Yes, it is.
I see.
They say, what you are, you do not see. What you see is your shadow.
Rabindranath Tagore.
Oh, you're familiar with our poet.
A little.
Aapka jai, mam sahab.
Yaan rakh do, acha. Theek. Ab tum chale jao.
Ji haan, mam sahab.
About the palace.
The best example of a painted box palace, as you call it, can be seen outside Mysore. It belonged to the Maharaja of Mysore. Kamla, you should take Mr. Flanders to see the palace.
Yes, auntie. I was planning on taking him there.
Oh, I'd like that.
There's also a summer palace. There is an art museum there. You may find it informative.
I hope to see it.
Tell me, Mr. Flanders.
Yes?
When you were in Delhi, did anything out of the ordinary happen?
Well, I did have a rather amazing experience.
Really?
I was walking down a little back street near the hotel. I don't know where my mind was, but I noticed time seemed to slow and the houses became transparent. I could see in through the walls, into the rooms, as though layers were being peeled away. People walking toward me were actually glowing lights. They no longer had bodies. They were just ovals of light floating above the ground. Even the trees and the plants were made of light. Light that was so vibrant, so alive. But when I reached out to touch a leaf, I had no hand. I was light. And then I did a stupid thing. I said, "Isn't this amazing? I must remember this." And poof, it was gone. And there I was, walking down the street. It was a nice experience, though.
Yes.
Oh, well, I didn't mean to stop the conversation. Can you tell me anything more about the man who gave you my card?
Auntie? Yes. He was quite tall. As tall as you, Mr. Flanders. As I said, he had white hair. His eyes were dark, very deep. Piercing, but compassionate. I trusted him immediately. He gave me his card. The card Kamla brought to you.
He said he was Jack Flanders?
I don't recall that he did.
Well, when he gave you the card, did he say, "This is my card"?
He said, "There will come a time when you will use this."
Hmm.
I didn't know what he meant, but I trusted him.
And this was 40 years ago?
So many years.
Well, you said he was in his 50s or 60s then. Well, he'd be in his 90s, maybe even 100 by now.
But the card has Jack's present address and phone number.
And I've only lived there for the past 3 years.
It's impossible, isn't it?
You know, it's amazing that you kept the card all these years.
I felt he understood. He knew.
He knew?
I'm tired. Ramchandar, ab main letne jaati hoon.
Ji haan, Mem Sahab.
Well...
No, don't get up, Mr. Flanders. I want to say that I believe all is as it should be. I'm grateful that you have come.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, Auntie.
Well, Miss Cumber, so what do you think of that?
Mr. Flanders?
Oh, yes?
I am pleased that you appreciate our poet, Rabindranath Tagore.
Oh, I see.
I am like the road in the night, listening to the footfalls of its memories in silence. Good night.
Good night. Wow.
Okay, now I'm retiring. Are you going to sit out there and think?
Well, does Ramchandra understand English?
He does when he gets to know you.
What?
You'll see.
Oh, there he is. Ramchandra, do you have a flashlight I can borrow?
Kya ji?
Mr. Flanders ko torch chahiye.
Nahi baby, torch to nahi hai.
What's he saying?
No flashlight.
Oh.
Aapke paas lalteen hai?
Haan, lalteen to hai.
What?
He has a lantern.
Oh, good, good.
Jack.
Yes?
Where are you going?
Up the hill.
To the palace?
Mm-hmm.
Now at night?
Wanna come along?
You forget. I'm forbidden to go there.
Still? At your age?
And what do you mean, at my age?
That's not what I'm...
Good night, Mr. Flanders.
What I meant was...
What?
That I have my foot in my mouth.
Good night.
It's a beautiful night. Sounds like they're having a good time down in the village. I could be down there dancing in the street, but no. I'd rather explore a haunted palace at night. Well, self, I hope you know what you're doing, because I sure don't. Not forbidding, not foreboding. It's not... What? Oh, God, a bat. Oh, why aren't you out catching bugs? Go on, beat it. That room should be here. I thought it was here. Am I turned around? It's nice shadows, though. Thanks, lamp.
Everybody prepare every year, me. know that every thread is undone, and before too long I'm spinning let go. Hold on, it's a spiral staircase, this view again. I look skyward, is there a plan? Why don't I throw the anchor before I start drifting? And why does things get so
from Pedro Show. Started the third hour out with part five of Jack Flanders and Dreams of India. All right, Jack. Tripping through the history up now. Then we had Giant Apples by the Houdinis. I Remember by L. May. And then Pick Up Your Tears by PNDC. That's another song from Bearsuit Records, a label I played in the first hour, that Old Man song. Well, I think the song was called Half Brother, but the band was called Old Man. And I got some other stuff too I want to play. That really good label. It's out of England and wild stuff. PNDC, though, I believe they're out of Belgrade in Serbia. And I'm going to play songs from bands in that area. You know, I think it's intense to support musicians, scenes all over, especially if contrast with some crazy, you know, the brothers and sisters in Tibet right now are having hell. I wish I had some music from some Tibet bands and China bands. PK-14. I do know of a band from there. I do have some music. But here's some Belgrade music. What, from Pedro Show? I was just thinking, I wish I had some music from Albania or Kosovo. God, I wish I had music from everywhere, really. There's a lot of, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to read you some of these song titles. I might screw up in band names because I'm not that good with Sir, but I'm going to try. We started that chunk off with A Poor Man's Supper by a Belgrade Yard Sound System. Then Inside the Social Machine by Belgrade Noise Society. Amphetamine Twist by Shining Shitbox. See, I got those pretty good, huh? And the next was Manitou 5 by Discipline Kichma. Then Samo Zvuk by Semyelya Broj 9. And finally, Solo Guitar 1 by Wu. So I guess I did okay there. Okay, this next tune is called Dissolving Boundaries. And it's by a band called Dysthymiac. And claimed to be from Antarctica. What from Pedro Show? That was I Can't Stand It by P. Heavy. And before that, we had Dream Albania by Keiko Ueda. And started with Dissolving Boundaries by Dysthymiac. Sorry for pronouncing shit all lame like that, but yeah, music is a righteous thing. It truly is. I know it gets coerced into some bizarre situations, make you buy what you don't want, make you fit in where you don't feel you do. I mean, they try to use that. Actually, I think it undermines them meannesses. Because it's a, yeah, it's a higher idealistic kind of way of human sharing. And it can be a righteous thing. And so I celebrate it. Speaking of celebrating, yeah, read Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. I'm doing that again. It's March 20, 2008 edition of Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.